Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
If you're in the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace where each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. If you're in the market, use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Hey everybody, this is Richard Deitch and welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. My producer is Patrick Antonetti. Two guests this week, though one conversation. It is Fox longtime NASCAR play-by-play announcer Mike Joy and longtime race analyst Larry McReynolds. Both Mike and Larry will be calling the Daytona 500, which airs on Fox on February 19th. Obviously, a massively watched event on the sports landscape. And we had a great conversation just on how they approach their job, how they determine success with their broadcast, balancing a broadcast that caters to sort of old school NASCAR fans with trying to get new people in. There's been a lot of changes in the booth and a lot of changes coming, including Kevin Harvick full-time next year. Larry's role has changed, and he discussed that. Mike Joy discussed how long he wants to do this. And so I haven't done a lot of NASCAR on this podcast, but this is something I wanted to do with, you know, two people obviously I've been watching for a long, long time. So Fox NASCAR play-by-play announcer Mike Joy and Fox NASCAR analyst Larry McReynolds coming up on the Sports Media Podcast. All right, as I said at the top, very pleased to be joined by these two gentlemen. I think people who listen to this podcast know I don't do a ton of NASCAR, but I certainly have great respect for the sport and the longevity of the product, just as a significant television product in the United States. The Daytona 500 will air on Sunday, February 19th. That's 2:30 p.m. on Fox. Mike Joy will call the race. This is he can correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's his 44th Daytona 500 for either on television or radio. He'll be alongside Clint Bowyer and Tony Stewart in the booth. My other guest is Larry McReynolds. He will join that Daytona 500 crew from the Fox Sports Studios in Charlotte. If you're a NASCAR fan, you see Larry all the time on their studio shows as well as the race broadcast. Two-time Daytona 500 winning crew chief. And he has been with Fox, again, I think for two decades or so, and I'm pleased to be joined by Mike Joy and Larry McReynolds. Welcome to the Sports Media Podcast.
Well, thank you Richard, for having us. Yeah. Sure.
You got Mike, was I right about that? Is this number 44 for you for Daytona?
Okay, I'll be honest. I had to look up my wiki page to verify it. But yes, 44 Daytona 500s, MRN Radio, then CBS Sports, and Fox since 2001.
Yeah, Mike, a little tip. I might not trust Wikipedia all the time. You know, I can go in there and just change it literally during our podcast. Right. So, but we'll go with 44. That's really, really impressive. And we'll get into that in a couple of minutes. All right, here's where I want to start off. Same question will be for both of you. Mike, what will you consider to be a successful Daytona 500 for you specifically as the race caller? How do you determine success in your job next Sunday?
I think it's one, Richard, that as we come to the final lap of the race, the fans understand who the players are, why they're at the front, how they got there, and they've picked out a favorite to win it. Because as often happens, the Daytona 500, even though it's a 500-mile race, it's often decided with a last lap pass or a collision that leads to a change of lead on the last lap. So if we can tell enough of those stories and give enough context to the cars that are running up front so that the viewers humanize those cars and have an affinity for the driver in them, then I think we've done a good job.
Larry, the same question for you in your analyst position. How will you determine success after that broadcast ends on that
day? That we don't have to do any rain fill whatsoever throughout the day. That's a big success for all of us. But you know, Richard, I don't get caught up too much in personal things, because I think that's what's made our group. If you look at a big chunk of our group, we've been together for so many years, and every one of us has an ego, or we wouldn't be doing what we're doing. But I think what has made us work for so many years as a team is the biggest chunk of our ego is, let's just have a good broadcast. Let's just have a good broadcast. And if we do that and we accomplish that, it's going to make all of us shine. It's like David Hill told us in the very beginning, we may have some bad races, but we should never, ever have a bad broadcast. And he was spot on. But, you know, maybe on that personal side with the role that I play, if I can forecast some strategy that actually comes to fruition, you know, I've also been taught, Mike's been a big component of this, it's okay to be wrong as an analyst when you're forecasting stuff. It'd be nice to know everything you forecasted came to fruition. But I guess if I can forecast a strategy that maybe a team or an organization or even a manufacturer actually seeing it unfold and it comes to fruition, then that's always pretty satisfying. But the end of the day, let's just have a good broadcast as a team.
So, Richard, I'll give you a good example of this. We were doing the Clash out in LA a week ago, and fairly early on in the race, just to stick a pin in it, I asked Larry, what about fuel mileage? Is that a consideration? And Larry gave a great answer, which is no, it's only 150 laps. Everybody should have started with a full tank. Shouldn't even be a consideration. And then later in the race, I asked, so Larry, how about my fuelish question now?
And I told him his fuelish question is no longer foolish.
And two cars ran out of gas.
Yes.
Because they didn't fill up before the start of the race.
Right.
Nice. All right. We got one pun in. Beautiful. All right. Mike, we were talking a little bit about this before you went on the air. You have a new lead producer, Chuck McDonald, who I know from college football. This is his first year. He places a longtime producer that you had in Barry Landis. You have other people in the production group who sort of at least have moved a little bit, but you know, from writing about this a long time, you know, I know how important like that lead producer is. He or she have their way of doing things. There's a rhythm that happens, especially with the lead broadcaster and the lead producer, but the same in Larry's position as well, analyst and the producer. So far, and I know it's early, has Chuck McDonald changed at all what you guys do, or do you feel like he has a vision that is at all different than what you guys have been doing for as many years as you did it before?
Not yet. Most of us at Fox Sports came over from CBS, either with the NFL or with NASCAR. And those that did were fortunate enough to have learned television broadcasting at the knee of Bob Stenner, longtime Summerall Madden producer, longtime CBS producer of the Daytona 500, and a producer who really excelled at being collaborative, at seeking out our input for storylines or for direction the broadcast that we wanted the broadcast to go in. And that's not just the booth, it's the pit reporters, it's everybody who works on the telecast. Stenner was great at that. And then he'd develop a plan of coverage from there. And, you know, I've worked with producers that are autocratic. You know, we're going here, we're going there, we're going there. I had a producer once in the middle of a telecast say, talk about the 8 car. I had no idea why or what, and he wasn't in a great battle. And to this day, I don't know what that motivation was. And that's not the way I like to work. I thrive on a collaborative process. I don't need to make the decision, but I do like to have input. We all do. That's how Barry Landis was, and that's how Chuck McDonald is. Now, granted, we've only had a couple of weeks to really get to know each other, although Chuck did spend the first 9 years of this 20 plus year NASCAR relationship working on the pre-race show for NASCAR. So he's not new to the sport, thank goodness. But he is very collaborative. And to his credit, I think Chuck's done a whole lot more listening than he has talking, you know, as far as trying to move the broadcast in a certain direction. We're going to have hiccups as we do with any major change. And the producer is not only the talent's first line of communication in any live sports telecast, you know, but also he's the one that's moving the telecast in different directions. The director's calling out the shots, but the producer is running the show. We did have a moment in the clash where we went to a live replay under Green Flag Racing that I didn't know was coming. And I quickly adapted to that, that can happen at any time. But, you know, so far it's been an excellent transition. He's got Pam Miller with him. He's got Richie Zients right there to kind of help guide him through the nuances of a sport where I guess the only comparison is golf. In golf, there are 120 balls in the air at one time. And in NASCAR, there's 40 of them, and they're all in very close proximity, and the story can come from any one of them at any time, unlike traditional sports coverage of a sport where there's one ball or one puck in play. So, boy, it's a lot to get used to, but I'm really excited about where we're headed, and so far, so good.
And Richard, just to add to that, Chuck McDonald told us all as a group in the very beginning when we had our seminar about a month ago, and then him and I had a lot of one-on-one conversations because I thought it was really important for him and I to make sure we were on the same page with each other. Because let's face it, my role is very, very different. It's very, very unique. I'm kind of a third analyst, but I'm more of a rules analyst. I'm not at the racetrack. I'm in a studio in Charlotte. It's almost a role that we created 6 or 7 years ago that didn't even exist in NASCAR. It you know, you've got the Mike Pereiras of the NFL and people like that, but we kind of fabricated this role. But Chuck McDonald told us and told me, what you guys have been doing is pretty damn good. I'm not here to change the world. I'm just here to kind of get my shorts on straight, and then we will start moving forward as we get into it. But he didn't want to come in and just reinvent the wheel because he felt like it didn't need to be reinvented.
So I want to ask you this, Mike, and this is, you know, this is something I'm sure that you've thought about, that the production has thought about, and there's not a perfect answer, but it is something that I think you have to think about. And that is, like, how does the broadcast balance, as a group, like catering to longtime NASCAR fans, the people who have been with you since, you know, David Pearson and, you know, Richard Petty, however, whatever iconic figure, Dale Earnhardt, whatever iconic figure you want to name, to today, with the real, like, job requirement that you got to bring new fans in. That's just the reality of a sport. And so I imagine if you're a 30-year NASCAR fan, you have an idea of how you want your broadcast to be. But if you're a new NASCAR fan, you know, I don't know if that appeals to you if you don't know all the nomenclature and everything else. That's a very tricky thing, I think, for Fox to try to figure out. Have you, I don't know in your position, Mike, if it even gets to that, because you got to call the race, but is that ever discussed in your production meetings? Like, is there a way we can navigate this line between appealing to old school, but also being able for a new fan to be able to pick up what's going on around?
I think it has to be organic. Certainly the Daytona 500, we're going to have roughly double the audience that we would have at any other race this year.
Yeah. It's like the Super Bowl. You have more casual fans for that race than you'll ever
Certainly.
Have the entire year.
So we're going to be a little more, we're going to be more descriptive in the Super Bowl on both the drivers, on the cars, on the rule changes, on the technology. But the phrase that to me is just fingernails on a blackboard is, for those of you new to NASCAR, and I just want to go, shut up, you know, shut up. Right. We're going to bring them along. And the you know, on the Super Bowl, you're not going to hear the announcers say, all right, now the team with the ball has four downs to make 10 yards and move the chains and blah, you know, and like that. Because you have to assume a certain level going in. My textbook example for this is the movie Hunt for Red October with Sean Connery. They did not insert a character into the movie to ask those questions. They simply talked about the submarine kind of as a living being and used the vernacular you would use if you were on board, with an occasional demonstration, but not much. And the viewer, by the midpoint in the viewer in the movie, the viewer knew all that technology and knew what the characters, when somebody says Weps has the con, you know, that means the weapons officer is in control of the ship. And you assimilate that by watching and listening and seeing what happens. So we can't do it quite that way, but If a driver takes the lead that is, let's say, not one of the established stars of the sport, it's appropriate to give his background and talk about where he's been and how he got to this stage. And more importantly, answer the question, why is it newsworthy that he's in the lead? Because it's not what we expected to see. So we will bring the new viewer along by being more descriptive, but not by pandering to the new viewer at the expense of the longtime fans, we hope.
Hunt for October is a phenomenal movie, but that's actually a really great example in terms of thinking about it. What about for you, Larry? Because the reality is, the question really, I would even argue, focuses more on what you do than Mike, because Mike has a job. He's got to call like what is in front of him. And even if I'm a novice, like I can understand like the number 8 car is ahead of the number 4 car. Like I don't need to know NASCAR to sort of know that. But where your expertise comes in, that's the specific nomenclature of the sport. So if you have to navigate this at all, how do you see it?
Yeah. And it's especially, I think, for my role, Richard, it's definitely walking on a tightrope. You know, when I stepped in the booth in 2001, with Mike Joy, one, so much respect and admiration for that man. And anything he said, I tried to be like a sponge. And there's dozens of things he said to Daryl and I that I listened to and I tried to adhere to. And he had a phrase or a saying that when they send a rocket into orbit to outer space, the people don't care what that rocket's made out of. They care about those astronauts that are in that rocket. And that always resonated with me. So kind of to your point about, and the Daytona 500 is even more complicated because, again, that broader audience, we got to be careful that we go very treetop with technical stuff. But we don't want to alienate that guy that wants to know what the rule changes are for 2023. It's, I think, especially in my role, and I can speak from experience because I spent 15 years in that broadcast booth with Mike and DW. And it's one thing I kind of enjoy about my role right now. It actually lets me take a step back and dig deeper into things before we go to air with it. Where when I was in that broadcast booth with Mike and DW, it was talk, move on. Talk, move on. You couldn't get bogged down in anything. As we get into the season, you'll see it more in practice and qualifying shows where we might dig a little deeper, but it is absolutely walking a tightrope because you want to make sure, you know, honestly, I'll give you a great example. I'm a huge football fan, but we've got analysts that they use phrases I have no idea what the hell they are because they never explain it. Just one time during a game. Just tell me one time what the hell you're talking about. Where three letters don't tell me nothing. Tell me what those three letters mean.
Yeah. If you don't know what RPO is, if you're watching a football game, you'll have no idea what run pass option is. And so I understand where you're coming from. Mike, I want to actually ask you both this about viewership. And anyone who's ever listened to this podcast, I think if you don't know this by now, maybe you're not listening. But the announcers have no control over viewership. Like the reality is you are coming to the event, whether this is Packers Cowboys or the Daytona 500, because that is the event that you want to see. Announcers obviously have a massive role in how you process that event and how you come away from the event, either liking it or not. But Mike Joy and Larry McReynolds, no offense to either of you guys, you're not bringing one viewer to the Daytona 500, nor, by the way, are you preventing one person from watching it. Although Mike and Larry, I do wish, you know, you were making Romo and Nance money. That'd be nice, actually, to get the creation of football there. So here's why I'm asking this. Like, the reality is, like, people like me, we get access to viewership every week, as I'm sure you guys do. And so, like, you know, I know what the Clash did, which was a little under 4 million viewers. That was down from last year, but up from the previous years when the race was on FS1, naturally speaking, and down, I think, from when it was on broadcast television sort of back in the day. Again, that's still an excellent viewership number in the world that we live in today. To bring 3.65 million people to watch anything in sports is a phenomenal number. That said, you guys have bosses, and like, they pay attention to this stuff. So what I'm asking you, in a very long-winded question, Mike, is do you ever, does viewership ever come into your sort of role as the lead here? Like, are you curious about it? Does it impact you at all? I'm curious. I've asked everybody this in other sports. I actually don't know how it does for you guys in NASCAR.
First off, you're right. Nobody's tuning in to see Clint Bowyer, Mike Joy, Larry McReynolds, Tony Stewart. However, I do think the announcers can play a role in holding an audience, and that's key to increasing an audience. Because you're going to have people who are going to tune out during the race, tune back in. There's quite an ebb and flow to any sports telecast. The NBA is probably the best example. I know a lot of people watch the first 2 minutes, last 2 minutes of a basketball game. Last 2 minutes sometimes takes 30 minutes. That's okay. But that's how people consume television and all media now, is by tuning in and out. Very few people watch the entire day. But there are things we can do to help hold an audience. I often describe what we do as a three-legged stool. Inform, educate, and entertain are the three legs. And if any one of those goes down, the stool falls over. So one of the things that's been stressed to us ever since David Hill got Fox into NASCAR is explain why, and try to explain what could happen next or what is likely to happen. I think a lot of people tell me that their enjoyment of watching, say, football games goes up when the analyst talks about what's likely to happen on the next play or on the next possession. You want to stay and see if he's right, because you've formed your own opinion already whether he's right or not. So there's a good bit of that we can do, and we can do more of it. And holding an audience is key to increasing an audience. You're right. Other than that, we have little control, and it's a statement about the health of this sport and other sports in general when the final ratings come out on Tuesday. Other than that, ratings don't get discussed in our production meetings. We just always go in trying to do the best job possible of attracting and holding viewers to try to make that number as high as possible. But the number is not relevant to what we do, because we're going to do the best possible job every week, whether we get a 1 rating or a 10 rating, as the Daytona 500 has in the past, and whether we have 2 million or 30 million viewers. It's still the pride of a job well done is the same, no matter what the audience is.
Yeah, I do want to add one other thing that Dr. Hill, an order he gave us, and it was always the final order: have fun. If you're not having fun, how in the world can you expect a viewer to be enjoying it and having fun? And if you look at our 22 years of doing it, I don't think any of us have had a problem having fun. We may miss the boat a few times on some other stuff, but we're going to always have fun. But yeah, I mean, two things that I have vowed not to hang my hat on, and that's ratings, because to Mike's point, there ain't a damn thing we can do about them. There really isn't. And the other thing is social media on Monday, especially Sunday night or Monday, because if you really look closely, the same group that blasphemes us for 4 months, they blaspheme NBC for the next 4 months, the majority of them. So, we go back to the ego of our team. Is it nice when the rating is up? Absolutely. But is it nice when we see a full stadium of people? Absolutely. But you know what? There really is not anything, because a few years ago, Richard, if we hung our hat on ratings, I'd have went and jumped off of a bridge and probably sliced my wrist as I was on the way down to make sure I got rid of it. To Mike's point, we can do the best job we can at maintaining the audience. But as far as those ratings moving the needle or butts in the seat, I'm not sure there's a whole lot we can do.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
I got two very good colleagues at The Athletic with me, Jeff Gluck and Jordan Bianchi, who I talked to before I was going to interview you two, and they gave me a couple things to think about and ask. So this will be that portion of this, and I appreciate those guys very much. Larry, I'm going to start with you. You mentioned this earlier in this interview. Your role has changed from being at the track and being next to Mike to now being in a separate studio in Charlotte. So like you said, you got to think about the broadcast, your role in the broadcast differently. It does give you, like you said, more time to maybe do some more stuff. Has that been a challenge for you to go from being at the track to now your current role?
It has. You know, I mean, I can make no bones about it. But, you know, Robert Yates, who I worked for 6 years, and he just beat this in me, because when I was his crew chief back in the early 90s, we would get rule changes about 3 times a week. And when some of them would come in that was not what I felt was in our favor, I'd lose my flicking mind. And Robert was always the guy that said, Larry, just remember, the person or the people that embrace change, that's the people that will prevail. And he installed that in me. And I've tried to make that work in my professional and my personal life. Was it scary when I got the call in May of 2015 that I was no longer going to be in the booth with Mike and Daryl for 2016? And probably the scariest thing is nobody could tell me what I was actually going to be doing in 16. But Mike mentioned Barry Landis. Him and I worked very hard creating this role. But the good news from 16 through, I think, 18, I was still at the track. But it has been a vertical mountain doing what I do and not being at the track. But the good news is I've created enough great relationships in that garage area with engineers, with crew chiefs, with engine tuners. They all embrace what I do and how I go about doing it. They know I'm not out to burn anybody or give away any secrets. And I've got a list of about dozen plus that I'll be calling, texting, emailing, especially after practice and qualifying on Saturday and on race morning. It's made me have to work hard at it. But again, I was bound to determine I'm going to take this change and I'm going to look at it. And I'm going to go, I'm going to make it as good as I possibly can.
Mike, we have seen play-by-play broadcasters go deep into their 70s and their 80s in Vin Scully's case. But look at Al Michaels still calling major NFL football. I think he's turned 77 this year. So Mike Emmerich, probably the greatest U.S. NHL broadcaster of all time, went into his 70s. When you're thinking about how you look at the current job long-term, how do you look at it? Because if nothing else, the where you are chronologically in your age, I feel like has changed now. In terms of sports television, where the idea of maybe if you had to get out of the booth at a certain age, not sure that exists anymore, especially for someone like yourself who's been in this role for a long time and has the kind of reputation.
Well, that you have. I'm I'm happy for that change. Obviously, it's come at a very good time for me. Wow. I don't have a determined endpoint. I'm not sure anybody in this role does. Analysts tend to rotate out of the sport sooner than play-by-play people because their currency of knowledge passes its sell-by date. I'm looking forward to having Jimmy Johnson in the booth for a race or two this year because he will be the first analyst we've had who has actually raced the new generation of NASCAR race car. So that kind of happens. Larry's done a fantastic job of keeping his fingers and his tentacles into the garage at all times and knowing what these teams are working with and so forth. My prep, certainly in my role, is different. And so maybe people, younger broadcasters can't go into the booth and fill 3 hours with the firsthand stories that I can or Larry can. And obviously Fox sees a value to that, or I wouldn't be there. So at some point, and I don't know if it's in the near future or the distant future, the execs at Fox will say, we need someone younger, or we have someone coming along that we want to try in that role at the highest level, at the Cup Series. And, you know, somebody else will make that decision. It probably won't be me. The other thing that happens, especially to play-by-play people, is what you are saying right now is what you thought of a millisecond to half to three quarters of a second ago. And occasionally, the thought and the speech process overlap or get skipped over. So I'll be thinking of driver X and mistakenly say driver Y or that sort of thing. When that starts to happen too frequently, it's time to step aside. And that's just part of the aging process that comes at different ages and different times for everybody. I try to stay very, very active so that that doesn't happen sooner than it absolutely has to. And I love what I do. Are they going to have to drag me out of the booth kicking and screaming at some date? Yeah, they probably will. And that's okay. I'm okay with that. I've been blessed with great production people and great analysts and great reporters that have allowed me to do what I get to do. And it's been a great career. If it stopped tomorrow, I'd say, you know, it's been an absolute blast. If it goes on for another 1, 2, 5, however many years, I'm thrilled to be able to do this as long as they would like me to. And my wife says, don't you dare retire. I love having you around the house, but not all the time. So it all works together. And at the end of the day, I love what I do. And as long as I'm able to do it at what the networks consider to be a very high level, I'm very happy to oblige.
I appreciate you answering that, Mike. Thank you.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
All right, a couple more here. Larry, next year we're going to see 2 full-time analysts in the booth, I think, for the first time since Darrell Waltrip retired. Obviously, I think I shouldn't even make the presumption, but Kevin Harvick will join the Fox NASCAR booth in 2024, for those who didn't see that announcement, calling the NASCAR Cup Series races. He's been in the booth the last couple of years. So next year, 2 full-time analysts. Larry, you obviously have experience with that. How do you think how do I sort of ask this? Does the sport sound different with more, like, with that, with more analyst voices in the booth than what we traditionally have in other sports, where it's generally speaking one play-by-play person, one analyst? Now, again, that's not, you know, like the NBA Finals has two analysts, so I don't want to make the presumption that this is across the board. But by and large, even still in 2023, your setup is one play-by-play person, one game analyst, one
hang on a second, Richard, because at one time during the clash last week, we had four analysts in the booth, four drivers to contend with, and neither Larry or I could hardly get a word in edgewise.
Yeah, that's tricky for you, Mike. Larry, how do you see that? Like, how do you see?
Yeah, if you think about 2020, we did have two driver full-time analysts in the booth because that's when Clint joined us and Jeff was there. Am I right in saying that, or 21? Am I right on that, Mike? Daryl retired at the end of 19, though, didn't he? And then the next year was 20, and that's when it was just Mike and Jeff. But remember, yeah. Five races in, they were in the studio in Charlotte because of COVID. And then 21 is when Clint joined us, and him and Jeff were together. You know, I think about stick and ball, Richard, and it's just my opinion. They're watching two teams. You know, basketball, they're watching 10 guys on the floor at one time. Baseball, you're watching one baseball go around the field or hit off of a bat. We've got 36 to 40 every single week. And I did some races in Xfinity. Mike and I actually did some Xfinity series races, like we'd go to Nashville and do them. And back in the day, from an analyst standpoint, that was hard. That was hard. And we caught ourselves finding some dead air, you know, because it's like, I don't know what else to say. I'm running out of stuff here. But you know what? With Kevin Harvick coming our way, I go back to heading into 2016 when Eric Shanks called me and said, we're going to hire Jeff Gordon. Did it knock the wind out of my sails a little bit? Absolutely. I'm a human being. But my thought was, we can get Jeff Gordon. That's a no freaking brainer. Four championships, 93 wins, and the list just goes on and on. Plus, he's a very personable guy. And I look at the same thing with Kevin Harvick. 60 cup wins. He's driven this new car now. He would have driven it 2 years. Cup championship, and he's still competitive. That's kind of a no-brainer. But I guess long-winded answer to your question, to me, doing a race, and I speak from experience with just two people in the booth, the play-by-play and our analyst with as many teams and as working parts as we got, it's a little bit of a challenge.
I agree. I'm much more comfortable with multiple analysts in the booth. I want them in the same booth. I don't like this two booths, two people in each, and everybody contributing, you know. But I had no problem having Kyle Busch and Joey Logano in the booth at the Clash, along with Clint Bowyer, Tony Stewart, and myself. Everybody got along. Everybody was friendly. Everybody was great. Later, it came to blows on the track, and one called the other two-faced. Joey said, I am two-faced. I'm going to be nice to your face, but on the track, I got a job to do. And so it, you know, it spilled over and it was great. But yes, I like having multiple analysts for all the reasons Larry expressed.
And Richard, just to comment on your retirement question, my wife asks me all the time when I'm going to retire. Other people do. And my response to her is to quote Bobby Bowden, the late Bobby Bowden, the head coach of Florida State. He said, well, gosh, Lee darn, when you retire, there's only one more big event left.
I may steal that. He's right, by the way. My advice to anybody is never retire.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid, no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
All right, final two. Mike, I'll start with you. I'm right about this, that you guys have an additional pit reporter this year, right? That Josh Sims joins Jamie Little and Reagan Smith. Am I correct on that?
So up until last year, we had Vince Welch, who came over from ESPN, and Vince was anchoring the Truck Series telecast, and he was the swing pit reporter on, I guess, almost half of our races, where we had a long enough pit road or a long run to the hospital area where we would need a third reporter. So Vince has been replaced by Josh Sims, who comes from NASCAR Race Hub, where he's now one of the hosts and was their field reporter, does a great job. And so, yes, he'll be with us for about half the events this year.
All right. So, first of all, I appreciate the clarity on that. The reason I was going to ask that is, like, it sort of goes back to what Larry said. Like, you can make the argument that, like, you could even have more than three pit reporters, right? Just given how many teams there are, given how many stories there are in a singular race. I mean, I get, like, you know, there's production issues and I don't know how many reporters Fox wants to hire. But Mike, from your perspective over the years, it seems logical to me that the more pit reporters you have on a race, the more chances you have to find out information in real time from what's going on at the track or in the garage.
We have had as many as four pit reporters on major races in my tenure at Fox. And I think as many as three at CBS prior to that. And yes, it's a lot of ground to cover. It ends up being a lot of voices, and Fox kind of made the decision that for most of the races, we would go with two reporters, and that's worked out well. The problem, after, you know, as I can say from, you know, nearly 20 years on pit road with CBS, when there's only two of you and one of you has to go back to the care center or into the garage to interview someone who's fallen out of the race, it really takes you out of the race.
Yeah.
And it really puts a much bigger load on the remaining reporter out there. It's hard to get all those voices into the telecast and have it all work, have it all make sense, and follow all those stories. I don't know what the right number of reporters is, but, you know, the production team makes that decision. And we go with the best we've got, and, you know, and it develops from there. But one thing I want to add, Richard, is I don't know of a sport or a TV network that has gone through what our group has gone through, beginning in early 2020, during COVID, when everything shut down. We were all driving to Atlanta Motor Speedway when the call came, everybody go home. And the sport was on hiatus, and nobody knew what would happen next. And the next thing you know, because one of the things people could do during COVID without impacting anybody else was go for a drive in their car. NASCAR figured out a way to have 40 guys go for a drive in their car on Sunday and make pit stops and run a race. And so NASCAR was the first sport back.
That's right.
Prior to that, what are we going to do with all this ad inventory? What are we going to do with all this time? And fortunately, iRacing, the simulation, had become so lifelike and so accurate that iRacing and Fox decided, let's put iRacing on TV. And Jeff and Larry and I did fake racing, you know, gaming as if it was real racing. And we got over 1 million viewers doing it. And I think that helped spur NASCAR to get back to the track. The iRacing thing kind of ran its course to a point where I think in the sixth race, two drivers started the race, immediately turned around, started driving backwards into people so they could crash out quickly because it wasn't their thing. But everybody else, you know, had a great time with it. So we did iRacing as if it was real. Yeah. Then we did real racing with nobody in the grandstand. which was surreal. And then we finally got back to having crowds in small numbers and then greater numbers until the pandemic passed. But, you know, no other sport was able to do what NASCAR could do, and no other sport was able to capitalize on that. No other network was able to capitalize on all of that opportunity, but Fox. So this group has just been, it's been very resilient and it's been very innovative. And I'm, during that whole period, I'm still shaking my head. I'm just so proud of what our group has been able to do. And I think it's, in the end, I think it's made us better broadcasters. We came up with some new tools, some new way of doing meetings, some new way of Larry contributing. And, you know, I think we're on our game. I think we're going into this season with the idea that this is the best it's ever been and maybe the best it's going to be for a while. So let's get at it.
Last one from me. I'll start with you, Larry. Mike, you're welcome to follow Larry if you wish. One of the things that really struck me was Kevin Harvick. I think he must have said this in the last couple of days. And he was talking about that the races need to look at this like an event. Like every race has to be looked at like an event, like a great event. You know, when you watch the Super Bowl, it's like it's an event more than a game. And he was referring to, like, for the Clash, shots of the college kids in the student section who were like enjoying Wiz Khalifa. And like he was saying that, like, that felt like an event, and that's the way you can bridge like the traditional NASCAR fan with bringing young people in. And I think like he's absolutely like dead on. Like, that's a really interesting way to look at it, to make it like 38 parties or whatever the schedule is. It's easier said than done. But Larry, like, that's kind of the one thing that like I give F1 a lot of credit for. It feels like every F1 race, it's not a race. It's like it's like a party or an event, or like some of that has to do with, you know, Monaco's beautiful, or, you know, Paris is beautiful. But like, I think Harvick's onto something. Like, is that feasible to like make every single race on the NASCAR calendar? It's not just a race. It's like Kentucky Derby's coming into your town this week kind of thing. I don't know. That just struck me as a really interesting way to look at the sport that maybe I had not looked at it before.
No, he's spot on, and I have said that for a long, long time. Now, do we need to stop every race and have a halftime and someone performing? I'm not sure we need to go that far, but you're right. Even when we started doing NASCAR on Fox 2 decades ago, pretty much it was the race. You know, that's the fans showed up and there was a race on a racetrack. They came, they left. But I relate it to, once again, because I am such a huge college football fan. My wife and I have been to a number of bowl games. We've been to a number of playoff games and national championship games. And yeah, we're all there for that game, but it's an event. I mean, I remember going to the Orange Bowl a number of years ago. We were there 6 hours before the game because there was so much going on and so much to do and so much enjoy. And I think we can always do a better job at it. But when you look at the tracks, they're doing a better job of it more and more and more. You just look at all the improvements that's been done to so many venues, that was done to Daytona, that was done to Richmond, to Vegas, to Phoenix, and the list just goes on and on and on. It's to give it that big event feel, and that there's more to do there than just be there for the race. That's why we're there, and we never want to take our eye off that. But we can always do better, but I see it happening at a pretty rapid pace. And then I think the other thing is, you know, I've said this for years, and I think I've heard Harvick say this. I think as we do add new tracks, it also has to be a destination. You know, that's what we did with the LA Coliseum. You've got Los Angeles. Now, I love, with a lot of push from our bosses, that we're going to go to North Wilkesboro for the All-Star race. It's going to have that Field of Dreams atmosphere to it, which they've done 2 years in Iowa with the baseball game. Do we need to go to North Wilkesboro and run a points event? I'm not sure about that. But I think we're headed in the right direction with this. It's a race, but it's an event too.
Yeah. What about you, Mike? You got anything to add before we go?
The some of the tracks are beginning to embrace the big event atmosphere. with satellite events. And by that, I mean, not just smaller races, but events in the community. And I think a couple things need to happen. One is more in-market promotion. When we are in LA, when we're in Daytona, when we're in Phoenix for the final race, there is a lot of in-market promotion. You can't escape the idea that the race is there. On the other hand, Martinsville is, and not to single them out, but they're the closest track to what was R.J. Reynolds' headquarters in Winston-Salem. And driving up there on a race weekend when Winston was the title sponsor of the sport, all you saw banners everywhere, every convenience store, every gas station. You could not escape the fact that Martinsville was the race destination on Sunday. And driving up there for the last race, there wasn't I didn't see a single banner anywhere until I got within half a mile of the racetrack and saw the police presence due to traffic and parking. And so I think the promoters need to do a lot more with in-market promotion. Secondly, Fox used to have a great show called Trackside on Friday evenings at the track that aired on Speed and later on, I guess, on FS1. I hosted it for a while. Steve Burns hosted it for the longest time. And several of our analysts were on the panel, and the drivers would come and visit and talk about their latest sponsor deal and talk about, you know, what their dog or their kids did or whatever. And it was a way for fans at the track to connect with the drivers, something we've lost. The drivers are sequestered in the motor coach lot. There is no trackside on Friday nights. It's really hard for the fan to feel an up-close affinity to a driver in today's NASCAR. That's got to change. We'd love to go back and do trackside again. Unfortunately, the tracks priced it out of existence to where Fox no longer felt it was viable. I wish we could make a business case for it again. And I know we could at some tracks, but in-market promotion, awareness of people that the race is going on, and satellite events to help make it a real event. I think if we're going to drive ratings and drive attendance, those are key things we need to do.
Yeah, I mean, he mentions Martinsville, and not to single anybody out. You go to Atlanta, Georgia on a race weekend, unless you happen to cut Sirius XM NASCAR radio on, you have no idea there's a race in town that weekend. It's pretty sad, actually.
I appreciate you answering that, gentlemen. The Daytona 500 will air on Sunday, February 19th. That's 2:30 p.m. on Fox. Mike Joy will have the call of the race. Larry McReynolds will partner with Mike Clint Boyer and Tony Stewart for analysis. Mike and Larry, this was really interesting to me. I don't get to talk NASCAR a lot, and the television aspect has always been something that's fascinating me because it's just a very different sport than the stuff I write about. I was very fortunate in Sports Illustrated. Once upon a time, I went to an assignment where I went to 6 tracks in 8 weeks. Which was, you know, cool for a Yankee New Yorker like myself. It was a real education. We had Ed Hinton, who used to write for us, who's a brilliant writer, and he educated a lot of us on the sport as well. So I've always had an affinity for it, even as a New Yorker. It's just interesting to me because it's very different than stuff that I grew up with. And I'll be watching on Sunday. I appreciate you guys coming on the Sports Media Podcast.
Thank you. Thanks, Richard.
All right, back in the studio. My thanks to Mike Joy and Larry McReynolds for coming on. And Daytona 500 is always interesting, even if you're not a diehard NASCAR fan. And obviously, that is coming up. We've obviously had some Super Bowl content on this podcast over the last couple of days, so you can check that out. For that, Adnan Virk and Adam Amin, those two are always good, and particularly when they are together. That's in the archives. Did a conversation on if super teams are good for the WNBA. And what coverage is like right now for the WNBA and women's basketball with my colleagues at The Athletic, Chantel Jennings and Sabrina Merchant. Kevin Burkhart and Greg Olson were on this podcast on January 27th. You can go back, and that was a pretty interesting conversation. Al Michaels on January 11th. There should be some stuff regardless of the sports you like that will be interesting in the archives. If you do like this kind of content, please leave us a 5-star interview and a nice note. That is how the podcast continues. I want to thank Patrick Antonetti for all his hard work. Thanks to everybody at Canes 13 for their support, and thank you for listening. We'll see you soon on the Sports Media Podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.